energy of the model. Find the ground state energy of an async model, for example. Okay? But in general, it's a function that takes these bit strings as inputs, and I want to find the bit string that minimizes such a function. And an example, as I said, is the ISIM model, right? And we know that the ISIM model in general, when it is non-planar, no, in two dimensions with a magnetic, random magnetic field, that you know, those problems are very hard to solve. Okay, so those problems are NP-hard, so it takes exponential time in general to solve these problems with any algorithm. Okay, so so as I said, I want to simulate this process. It's a annealing process. I will heat the system up a lot at the beginning, and then I will allow it, you know, to lower its temperature very slowly. I have to do this very slowly because I want to remain in equilibrium pretty much all the time. The definition of ground state space I will call A0 to the ground state space of the classical system. So this is basically all the states that minimize my cost function, the energy. Okay. Okay, so let's see. I mean, so we know that if we are at the fixed temperature T and beta denotes the inverse temperature, and if we're in equilibrium, okay, the state of equilibrium of this classical system is given by the Gibbs state, okay, which is denoted here. Z is the partition function, it's the sum over all the configurations of e to the minus beta, and the value of the cost function or the energy of each configuration, and each of these things are the probability of being in each particular state of my classical system. So that is in equilibrium. And we want to remain in equilibrium as we lower T, as we increase beta, right? So we start, for example, from beta equal to zero, and then we start to increase slowly beta, okay, and to a value which is much greater than one. And we would expect that in such a case, beta is much greater than 1, this state is going to be the convex combination, very close to the convex combination of all the states in the ground state space of my classical system, right? So that's at zero temperature, I mean, very small temperatures, if we are in equilibrium. Okay, so how can I implement such a method using Markov chain Monte Carlo techniques? Okay, so to do this, the first thing is to build a stochastic matrix. I need to build a matrix that has as inputs all the transition, I mean, the transition rule, all the transition probabilities. I call such a matrix S of beta, and in each entry of this matrix, I put the information that if I'm in a particular state, okay, and for a particular beta, what is the probability of going to any other state? Okay, that's what I do. So each entry here, okay, if we call this entry P of sigma sigma prime, they encode the probability of going to the state sigma prime if I'm state sigma. Okay, so that's my Markovian rule, basically. And I will build such a matrix such that it's a steady state. I mean, the eigenvalue one. Eigenstate of such a matrix is the equilibrium state, right? I mean, I want that I will build these probabilities such that its equilibrium state is the equilibrium state we want to, okay? So that's what you do in when you use Markov chain Monte Carlo techniques to simulate this Markovian process. And the simplest example is the Metropolis rule, okay? For example, if maybe you have heard of this, but the idea is assume that you have, I mean, an async model, for example, and I'm a particular time, I'm in a certain state sigma, okay? Metropolis rule, what it does is it flips one of the spins at random, okay? And the probability of flipping it is given by the minimum between 1 or e to the minus beta and the difference of energies between both states, okay? So if I'm in one state and I flip one spin at random, and I go to a lower energy state, then I will go to that state with probability 1. If the energy is bigger by flipping that state, I will go with the probability which is given basically by the Boltzmann ratio. Okay, so that's what you do with the Metropolis rule.
So if you input the probabilities, if you build the probabilities in this way, you can assure that the equilibrium state of such a matrix, its unique one eigenvalue state of this matrix, is actually the equilibrium state we want to. Okay? So if we start from any initial distribution, like for example, you can start from the completely random distribution, you pick one state at random, and now you apply such a rule q times, and q is much larger than one, you could expect that after a large amount of steps, you will end up having the equilibrium distribution. You will end up sampling from the equilibrium distribution. That's what you do in Markov chain Monte Carlo. Yes?
If you do it like that, you will eventually end up in the ground state?
No. This is for a finite beta, I clarified before. Yeah. If beta is very large, you will be very close to the ground state. Yes.
Okay. Okay. You said you
the point is how many times you have to do this to be epsilon close to the.
Right, that's my question.
Yes. I will explain.
Right. That is, you do it for all possible arrangements in it for changing one. But then
I follow one at each step, right?
Right. How do you know that it's going to converge after you perform all those times, that it's going down?
Because I'm assuming that there is only, in this case, not when I build this matrix, there is only one state that has eigenvalue 1. The other ones have eigenvalue whose norm is lower than 1. So when I apply this many times, okay, basically the only thing that survives is the state with eigenvalue 1.
So you put it in the beginning.
No. Each state, maybe you are more familiarized, I don't know, with the language of quantum mechanics, I don't know. Yeah. But suppose you start from some initial state, right. Okay? That state has always certain component on the equilibrium state, okay? So when I apply this rule many times, I kill all the other components except the one that has weight in basically.
Yeah, but it's correlated with everything else, right? So there's no guarantee that you can see it monotonically. If you take the whole system into account and all possible.
At each step, it may be non-monotonic,
right.
But at the end, if Q is large enough, it will be.
Why? Yeah. That's my question.
Well, because you kill all the other components. I mean, okay.
I'll ask it that again.
But think about, for example, the complete graph, right? I mean, the equilibrium state in complete graph is all weights equal everywhere. So you put a particle somewhere and you apply this rule one time, so you go to the nearest neighbors, and you start to spread, and then you will.
But in the real situation, they're all correlated. The I component and the rest. So that's my point.
Okay. But I don't know. I mean, is it clear so far, or yeah? No. Well, if not, you're welcome to ask questions. I don't want to. Okay. So some properties of the transition matrix are that if I add up all the probabilities in one of the columns, I come to add up to one. I can assume detailed balance. If I assume detailed balance, then I will guarantee that equilibrium state is the state that I want to. The eigenvalues are such that the highest eigenvalue is equal to 1, and all of the other ones I can almost take them in this way. There is a probability. And the so-called mixing time, okay, is the inverse of the spectral gap of such a matrix. The spectral gap of the matrix is the difference between the largest eigenvalue, which is 1, and the second largest one. Okay? So that the mixing time tells me basically how many times I have to apply this rule, okay, such that I end up epsilon close basically to the equilibrium distribution. So if this curve is exponentially small, the amount of times I need to apply my rule, okay, is exponentially large. And that is what happens when you implement the things to solve MBR.
Maybe the key to my question earlier is the Markovian approximation. I was trying to.
Okay.
Can you say something like that? Because if you consider a non-Markovian, non-equilibrium system is not that simple, then you just perform these step by step independently and you can get to the lower equilibrium state.
Okay.
That's my question to ask yourself.
Okay. Well, we can discuss this in more detail later, but yeah. Okay. So how does classical simulated annealing work? Okay, based on what I just explained. What I will do now is, instead of fixing my temperature, instead of fixing my beta, and start from some initial distribution, I play it many times such that I arrive to the equilibrium one, what I will do is I will build first a stochastic matrix where my parameter beta is very small. That means a very large temperature. And I will start from the equilibrium distribution at infinite temperature, which is Pickett state completely at random, right? I mean, at very large temperatures, all the states have the same probability. Okay? So my initial distribution is the completely random distribution, and now I will apply my stochastic matrix at very large temperature, and I will start to lower the temperature, increase the beta, okay, at each time that I apply my updating rule. Okay? If I do that slow enough, if I change this beta very slowly, I would expect that I go from equilibrium state to equilibrium to equilibrium to equilibrium. I follow the equilibrium state of all along the path. Okay?
So that is what classical simulated annealing, how simulated annealing can be implemented with Markov chain Monte Carlo techniques. But again, I say that in order to be always all along the path close to equilibrium, I need to change my beta or change my temperature very little at each step. Okay? So how little you have to change that beta is determined by the local gap of the spectral matrix. Okay? So if I have a lower bound to the minimal spectral gap of this stochastic matrix all along the path, I can change my beta, okay, by that amount, which I call delta, at each step. Okay? And now I can assure you that you will be very close to equilibrium at the end of the simulation, when beta final, my final inverse temperature is very, the temperature is very small and beta is very large, okay? So basically what happens is this is the convergence rule. I mean, if you're gonna use this scale such that you change your inverse temperature proportional to the gap of the stochastic matrix at each step, then the probability of finding my classical system in an state other than the ground state of the system, if I want to bound such a probability by epsilon, okay, the amount of steps I need to apply this rule is given by this equation here. Basically, we can forget anything else, but the main point is that there is an inverse of the spectral gap, of the minimal spectral gap along the path, okay? So that's basically a mixing time. And this may be, I don't think you can do better than this. I mean, that such a mixing time will always show up there. So again, what I said before is that if that spectral gap is exponentially small, then this P is going to be exponentially large. And that's what will happen when you want to simulate. Yes?
You said that there is a unique final state if you apply many, many times your transition matrix, let's say.
Yes.
So now you start with a completely unique state.
Yes.
And you decrease the temperature.
Yes.
So, but if it's unique, I would think that.
It's unique at each beta.
Okay.
Okay, so for each beta, you have a different one.
Yeah, but I could start already with a very low temperature rather than high temperature.
Yeah. Well, but simulated annealing performs much better.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a very low, very bad bound. If you have more information about the gap, you don't have to go to a constant. Yes. But you, yeah. Okay. So it's pretty much like for those of you that know the adiabatic theorem in quantum mechanics, it's pretty much the same thing, right? I mean, I change some parameter, okay, and I want to converge and find some final state, and the complexity, total evolution time, is given by the inverse of the gap. It's pretty much the same thing. So what I will do is basically try to implement a quantum algorithm that is some sort of adiabatic evolution, okay? And that does that. I mean, it converges to a final state, but I want to do this faster, okay, than this, the classical annealing process I just explained. So again, for notation, lambda 1 is the largest second value, lambda 2 is the second one, so, I mean, if you have a phase transition, for example, in the middle, then such a gap is going to close, and, you know, and the complexity, you will have, for example, critical slowing down. Okay, so, yeah, that is the main motivation, and basically, of this talk, I want to build a quantum algorithm that outperforms classical annealing methods implemented by Markov chain Monte Carlo. So the idea of my quantum algorithm is that I will want to prepare for any beta along the path the following state. is the coherent superposition, okay? So sigma here now, the bits are denote, you know, are just basically a set of n qubits before we have bits. But as amplitudes, I want the square root of the Boltzmann weights, basically, such that if I measure in this basis, the computational basis, I will sample with equilibrium distribution, right? Because the probabilities will be given by the square of this. I want the,
I mean, in different talks, they call these Gibbs states or, I don't know, whatever. But it's like a quantum coherence version of, coherent version of the Gibbs state. So, as I said, if you measure in the computational basis and you prepare such a state, then you can sample with the equilibrium distribution. In particular, if beta is much larger than one, you could expect this state is going to be the pretty much the equal superposition of all the ground states of my classical system. Okay? So, and I want to do this basically by studying some trivial state and applying a set of elementary gates, okay? And the amount of elementary gates I need to apply to prepare such a state will determine basically the complexity of such quantum algorithm. Okay, so this is what I just said. I will try to do this basically in some sort of adiabatic evolution, okay? There is a parameter beta now, which is not the temperature anymore because I'm evolving the pure state all the time. But I will change that parameter, okay? And I want to change the state such that at each step it represents the equilibrium distribution of my classical system for that particular beta. Yes.
Equilibrium is a key thing in annealing, right?
Yes. I'm following the equilibrium. But, yeah.
But you are applying some quantum algorithm to
yes.
it.
Yes.
Are you doing it with mixed states?
No. I'm at zero temperature now. So I'm with pure states.
You're zero temperature.
Yes. My the temperature is entered as a parameter in the quantum system.
Right.
Okay? It's a parameter that I can tune, some interaction parameter now. Mm-hmm. I want to prepare this state. This is a pure state.
But in realistic, in the annealing process, right? You just told us you're going trying to go.
Yes, it's classical and you have mixed states all the time.
Right. So
now I want to simulate that process coherently with the deterministic quantum algorithm.
With mixed states?
I want to simulate it. With pure states. With this pure state.
Okay.
I want to simulate it. Yeah. I'm mapping the problem to a quantum one and zero temperature in the quantum case, if you want to, and I evolve unitarily pure states. Okay, so in order to perform some sort of adiabatic evolution, okay, such that you know the state psi of beta, to prepare the state psi of beta for any particular beta, the first thing I need to do is to find the Hamiltonian such that that state is its unique ground state or its unique largest eigenvalue state. Okay, so it's very interesting, but if you just for a similarity transformation of to the stochastic matrix that you use for your classical Monte Carlo method. in this way, it's just a similarity transformation with a diagonal operator into the beta e over 2. E here is just the basically denotes the cost function, or you have the energies of the classical system in the diagonal. If you perform such a transformation, then you end up having a symmetric operator. Okay, such that its largest eigenvalues eigenstate is the state we want to. Okay, this Hermitian operator has at each of the entries basically has the square root of in the entry sigma prime has the square root of going of the probability of going to sigma prime if I'm in sigma times the probability of going to sigma if I'm in sigma prime. So it's symmetric. Okay. As I said, it's very interesting because it has the state that we want as its largest eigenvalue state, or if we put a minus here, then it's going to be its unique ground state. Okay, the point is that because this Hamiltonian that I just did is a similarity transformation of a stochastic matrix, all its eigenvalues are the same. Okay, it's a similarity transformation. In particular, the gap, spectral gap, will be the same. Okay? So if I now want to do some sort of adiabatic evolution, such that I change my parameter beta in my Hamiltonian very slowly, the total evolution time will be determined by the spectral gap of such a Hamiltonian. In particular, the dialectic theorem is going to tell you roughly that you have to go with volition term that goes order one of the Gauss square. In this case, you can avoid one of the powers. But the point is that because this gap is the same as the stochastic matrix, I don't do any better with this. Okay? If you remember classical simulation annealing implemented in Markov chain Monte Carlo, the total evolution time went with the inverse of the spectral gap of the stochastic matrix. Now it's the same thing, because the gaps are the same. So what I will do next is to build another Hamiltonian that has a much bigger gap. In particular, the gap is going to be the square root of this gap. Okay? So to do that, I will need to introduce a bipartite quantum works, which are called Segedis works, and there's a few references here where these things were used. I need to duplicate my system, and I need to define two isometries, which I call Y and Z. And what Y does is that, basically, it takes a input state, some state sigma, okay, and it builds the coherent superposition of the square root of the probabilities to go to sigma prime if I mean sigma. These are determined by the stochastic matrix, okay? And sigma prime. That is what it does. And Z is the same thing, but it is just a swap between both systems. So these two things can be implemented because I guess they are isometries can be implemented with unitaries in this larger space. Okay? Basically, these isometries of these unitaries are what you could do if you want to simulate the probabilistic classical algorithm, a trivial quantum simulation of a probabilistic classical algorithm with your quantum computer. Well, you will need to use this sort of operators, right? Okay, so the point is that the use of each one of these is pretty much equivalent to one step in Markov chain Monte Carlo methods, because they need to call the stochastic matrix, basically a box that computes the entries to the stochastic matrix only once. So I need to go a little bit faster, but the thing is that the Hamiltonian I talked about before, which was a similarity to the transformation of the stochastic operator, is the product of those two isometries. So, if lambda g is one of the eigenvalues of this operator, then, and with the eigenstate phi j, then I will have this relation here, right? Those are the eigenstates, this is h of beta. But the point is that this times this and this times this can be thought about like a unitary operator applied to a certain state and a unitary operator applied to another state, okay, those are the unitaries to implement the symmetries. So basically, each eigenvalue of this thing, okay, is an overlap within two pure states, okay? So it is the cosine of the angle that these two states form in some log sphere. So now, my quantum work basically the unitary operator will be, like in Grover search, will be a reflection over one of the states times the reflection over the other state. If I do that, the product of those two reflections will be a rotation along a perpendicular axis of these two states. Okay? And the eigenvalues will be the phases. Okay? Because I rotate that amount. So what I'm doing is I'm building a unitary operator whose eigenphases, okay, are the alpha j's, not the cosines of alpha j's. So if the spectral gap was 1 minus lambda 2, no, my delta before was 1 minus lambda 2 for my stochastic matrix or my Hamiltonian there. Now, the difference between the eigenphases of the unitary will be much bigger for those two, because I'm going from 1 minus the cosine is basically goes roughly with the alpha square, right? And now I have an alpha here. So that will be my quantum work. Okay? And in particular, you can show that the zero eigenphase eigenstate of such a quantum work is a state that we want to prepare. Okay? It's something like this. Times zero in my register P. So what I want to do is now it's basically to follow the zero eigenphase eigenstate of the quantum work as I change my beta. Okay? Because I will follow this state if I do that. And now if I measure the system A, I will sample with the equilibrium distribution. Okay? So this is basically the idea that we had a stochastic matrix that had this gap, and now we have a unitary operator that has a much bigger gap. Okay? Basically it's the square root of the gap before. And I want to follow basically the zero eigenphase eigenstate, okay, of this unitary operator.
And to do that, I will implement some sort of quantum Zeno effect. Okay? So with quantum Zeno, you know, you can follow the ground state of different Hamiltonians or, you know, the instance of the unitaries or so on. So the point is that the states are two different temperatures, basically, over this rule. I mean, there is a a constant here, order one, whatever, but it's delta beta squared. So if I measure in the eigenbasis of my unitary, okay, at each step, and the distance between each step is very small, then I will likely project onto the ground, onto the zero eigenphase state of the unitary at every time. Okay, so that is what the quantum Zeno effect will do. So after q steps, basically, the error will be given by q delta beta squared, but q delta beta is a final beta, basically. So this will be the total error. And this, if I want, you know, if my total error is an input and algorithm, then this will determine the steps at which I have to do this quantum Zeno effect of this measurement. So yeah, I'm sorry I don't have time, but yeah. So okay, so that's pretty much the idea. But the point now is, okay, so how do I measure into the eigenbasis of each unitary, each step? Because I don't know, right? I mean, how to build such an eigenbasis trivial. So the way I will do that is that I will simulate the quantum Zeno effect by calling the unitary a random amount of times at each step. And the random amount of times is basically, is at each step is going to be n1, n2, and so on, but each n will be chosen completely at random from a set that basically goes of the evolution times that go from 1 to the inverse of the spectral gap of the operator at each point. Okay? So that is telling you basically that the overall complexity of this algorithm will depend on the spectral gap of the unitary that I just built, and not on the Hamiltonian that we had before, or the stochastic matrix. So I'm done, pretty much. So that means that because those gaps are, one is the square root of the other one, I mean, the total implementation complexity here goes with, you know, depends on epsilon, of course, but the main point is here, that you have the square root of the gap. So in conclusion, we have the following. So in classical simulated annealing, we have a classical system. We want to prepare, for example, the ground state of such a classical system, or with probability that is bounded by epsilon. So if we do that and we use Markov chain Monte Carlo techniques to simulate that, the probability of not finding the system in the ground state, if we want to bound that by epsilon, then the total complexity is given by this, but basically it depends on the inverse of the gap. In the quantum case, we have this relation here. Okay, gamma, think about gamma is like 1, but this is the dimension, but we have 1 over the square root of the spectral gap. And that is a large improvement for very hard instances, because in those instances is when the gap decreases, basically is exponentially small with n. Okay, so we have a quadratic speedup. So, well, what's up?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is, oh, I'm sorry, this is one. Okay, so that was basically the idea of this.
Just one quick question while Charlotte is next speaker setting up. Okay, you were going first.
So, in adiabatic algorithms, we usually use local Hamiltonians because we imagine they're easier to implement.
Yes.
But the Hamiltonian you wrote down looks very non-local for this thing. Is there a way?
No, if you're updating or rolling, your classical Markov chain is locally crystal.
So that Hamiltonian, that's the whatever it was,
yes,
y
yes.
Dagger z. That was, you can do that in a local with
local.
Yes, locally. Okay.
As local, it has the same, as local as your stochastic matrix is. If you use Metropolis rule where you update locally, it's local, completely local. I mean, it's like it's going to depend on the range of the interactions to your classical system. But if you have the IC model, okay, you will have some sort of IC interactions and the transfer stuff.
Yes?
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I was just wondering, in what settings do you know the spectral gap, and in what settings the approach is anyway certified, like you promise that you will get inversions to the right?
Well, I mean, for example, Grover falls into this. I mean, in Grover, the spectral gap is, right, I mean, 1/√, of course, so in those cases, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, I think you should pretty much take a problem and analyze it. I don't have a general, if you were looking for a general, it's very complicated.
Just a small question. Until finally, the theorem psi of beta has to be an eigenstate of h of beta.
Yes.
Do you know that? It doesn't seem to be, actually.
Yeah.
No, it's written as an expansion in terms of eigenstates, but it doesn't have to be one. I mean, the coefficients can change, right? If you apply h of beta.
I'm sorry, maybe I misunderstand. I mean, the h of beta I built has, say, of beta as its unique ground state.
Yes.
For h beta, yeah.
You can answer all the questions.
Yeah. I mean, it's just.